if she never saw him again. The lamps in the nightclub flickered and then went out altogether. There were a few shrieks, but light spilled from the hundreds of votive candles in the ballroom, and the jazz band never missed a note. Addie felt a hand on her exposed back. Her beaded black dress was modest in the front, but quite naughty in the rear, dipping nearly to her waist. It was a cold hand. She'd felt that hand before. Rupert! She'd just been thinking of him. Had her random thoughts somehow summoned him? If so, she'd prefer to turn off her brain completely. But how? Her mind did have an alarming tendency to wander.
"It's only I, again. Don't be frightened," Rupert whispered.
"Easy for you to say," she hissed back.
The noise in the club was infernal, but someone might hear them anyway, or hear her, and think she was losing her mind once more. She'd been caught too many times last August, talking to herself. Oh, Lord, was he here because someone was going to die? That was certainly no way to start the new year.
"Not as far as I know," he said, his voice low and smooth.
The blasted man was reading her mind. If only he'd possessed that skill before he died, things might have turned out differently in their marriage. A truly understanding man was a rare commodity indeed. In fact, Addie wasn't sure she knew of any, with perhaps one exception. Rupert cleared his throat to re-engage her attention.
"This seems to be a minor intervention on my part. The notice to rescue you was very sudden. I'm not really prepared, and I had my own party to go to, you know."
He sounded a trifle peeved. Like the nightclub, Addie was in the dark regarding Rupert's post-life schedule. The fellow upstairs, as Rupert referred to him, had an unusual sense of humour. Keeping Rupert from entering the gates of heaven by assigning him to be Addie's guardian angel for what seemed now to be an apparently indeterminate period of time was extremely annoying. Rupert must be anxious to move on, and Addie had hoped last August's antics had assured him of his proper place in the afterlife, wherever that might be. She had her own opinion where he deserved to go, but perhaps she should be more charitable. It was difficult to see him in the flickering light, but he appeared to be wearing the same bespoke Savile Row suit she'd buried him in, his maroon tie and matching pocket square still crisp. His moustache had grown back, and there was no denying he was amazingly attractive, even if he was amazingly dead.
"Why are you here?"
"The joint's about to be raided. Think of the headlines. British beauties behind bars. Society dames detained. Your sainted mother would have a fit if you and C wound up in the pokey with the hoi polloi."
Addie had no idea what a pokey was, but she could infer with the best of them.
"Now?
The buttons are upstairs, even as we speak. Do you know they carry bean shooters in this country?"
"Speak English, Rupert."
"I am, my dear, the American version. This is quite a place, what? Rather marvellous in its own grubby way."
Addie wondered how long he'd been in New York, but apparently time was of the essence if she didn't wish to find herself on the front page of every rag in the city, so she didn't ask.
"How can we get out of here?"
"They've got all the exits blocked. When they turn on the lights, it'll be curtains. Go get C and meet me in the men's loo."
"The men's loo?" Rupert dissolved before she had a chance to question him further. Well, if caught in the men's toilet, she could always pretend to be a building inspector, although beaded chiffon was an odd choice of uniform. Addie waved wildly at C, but of course went unnoticed in the shadowy room. She gathered up their purses, gingerly ducked around gyrating couples on the dance floor, and grabbed C's flailing arm.
"Quick, it's an emergency."
Her sister stopped mid-step.
"What's wrong?"
Her partner didn't seem to notice C's ceasing and continued to black-bottom his bottom off.
"You've got to come with me. No time for questions."
C, at one time, had been Addie's little minion at their childhood home, Broughton Park. She'd marched off to battle in whichever direction she was sent, put crickets in their governess's bed.